Okay, so first I thank the organizer to have invited me to present this ultrasonic investigation of these two-dimensional organic conductors. These ultrasonic measurements are quite difficult to do on these conductors and also on ITC superconductors. So that's why you need good collaboration. So the work I will be presenting has been done by two graduate students over the last 3 years. A dedicated technician for the pressure measurement, and also the chemist who is doing the material, because we need the biggest crystal as possible to do these ultrasonic measurements, and well, of course, with the high quality. So the outline of the presentation. Well, maybe I will skip something because the information has been given by two previous speakers. I will give you the motivation to do ultrasound in organic conductors. I will skip the structural properties. I will talk about transport properties that has been done on the same crystal used in ultrasonic experiment. So it will be helpful to discuss the phase diagram at the end. I will give some details about the ultrasonic measurement, because as I said, it's not easy to do, so we have to adapt the pulse echo method to obtain the elastic constant. Then I will present the result first on two ambient pressure superconductors. The data have been obtained using a liquid pressure cell, using a liquid, so you don't have enough precision in pressure to go to the chlorine system, and the most recent data that has been obtained on the pressure cell using helium gas. So you can apply very low pressure. I just remind the phase diagram. Well, the motivation was, of course, since there is a similarity between the ITC doping temperature as a function of doping, the proximity of anti-chromatic phase and the superconducting phase, and also the presence of the pseudo gap line. As you can see here, temperature vs as a function of chemical pressure, you have this close proximity between anti-ferromagnetism and superconductivity, and this crossover line, which has been presented by the two previous speakers. So our main goal was to use ultrasonic attenuation to see if we have conventional or unconventional superconducting state. I will not present the data relative to this superconducting state. We have some preliminary measurement, and these seem to go along unconventional, but we have to be sure before publishing anything on that. But as we did the measurement, the ultrasonic measurement on the first crystals that are superconducting at ambient pressure, the bromine and the NCS2. Well, we saw the superconducting state, but we saw also anomalies related to this pseudo gap line. So that's why we were motivated to do the measurement on the chlorine system, since you can start from the insulating side going through this phase diagram, as was shown by the previous speaker. I must say that no ultrasonic measurement can be found in the literature on ITC compound or on organics, because samples are too small. So you cannot apply the usual ultrasonic technique to these crystals. Oh, I will mention it. We have a surface of 1 square millimeter, and the thickness is between, when they are large, is between 0.1 and 0.3 millimeter. So this is quite thick compared to ITC, but too small to do the measurement, well, conventional measurement. I only want to come back to the structure. So for the bromine compound and the chlorine compound, the structure is orthorhombic. So this is a unit cell. These are the planes, the molecule planes, and these are the insulating planes. So I will be doing measurement, ultrasonic measurement, along that direction, because this is the easiest one. So I will propagate longitudinal wave along this axis. So I will look at the compressibility in a direction normal to the planes. First, I would like to show the transport measurement that has been done on the same crystal. These are microwave resistivity measurement. On these two ambient pressure superconductors, this is the transverse resistivity. Why the transverse resistivity? It's more easy to do with microwave measurements, since we don't have any contacts on the sample. But I can assure you that the temperature profile of the resistivity perpendicular is the same as the one you get in the plane. The only thing you have, it's a 1,000 decrease in resistivity when you are along the plane. So when you go down in temperature, you have this small semiconducting behavior and a maximum around 100 Kelvin. This maximum seems to be related to the freezing of the CH2 groups at the end of the molecules, and then you enter the metallic state. And for both compounds, you have positive derivative of the resistivity and maximum slope here and here, where pseudo gap features are generally reported. And after this point, you enter almost T square law, saying that you have Fermi liquid behavior. And as you can see, this is the copper SCN, this is a bromine. The lower the TC, the higher the pseudo gap temperature or the crossover temperature. So it goes along the temperature pressure phase diagram that I have shown at the beginning. And for the chlorine, we cannot do the microwave measurement as a function of pressure. So we cannot follow that as a function of pressure. And neither for the chlorine system. For the chlorine system, I have shown here the parallel resistivity and the perpendicular resistivity. Starting from room temperature, the resistivity is increasing very slowly, but it increases more rapidly below 50 Kelvin. And if you look at this one, which is the parallel resistivity, it seems that you have also crossover. So you have a negative derivative of the resistivity as a function of temperature, but it seems that you have also crossover around 34 Kelvin. And the antiferromagnetic state, which is rarely seen on transport properties, seems to be seen around 27 Kelvin, where you have a linear variation now of the resistivity on both the perpendicular and the parallel resistivities. Why linear behavior? Well, I don't know. And in all the transport measurements reported in the literature, there is always a change in resistivity around 11 Kelvin. And this seems to be also related to superconductivity. If you apply a magnetic field perpendicular or parallel to the sample, this anomaly will go down and disappear. So it seems that you have incomplete superconductivity in all these systems, even at 1 bar. Now you know this phase diagram obtained by people in Orsay and Sherbrooke. I will not add much more, saying that these measurements are quite difficult. Well, I am an experimentalist, so I must say that. This is a very low pressure. And if you take a chlorine sample and put it into grease to do your measurement, the pressure that we will get with the grease is enough to go from there to there. So this will bring problems to our measurements, since in an ultrasonic measurement, we need to glue the sample to the piezoelectric transducer. So we were not very optimistic at the beginning to that we can do the measurement. And I must say also, as the previous speaker has said, well, this first order line, the metal insulator transition, is obtained with a small diamagnetic signal, and the diamagnetic signal is disappearing at the critical point. So you don't have a lot of precision around this point. And this dashed line is only a suggestion of the connection with the pseudo-gap features. This has not been measured before. So what we want to do now is to use ultrasonic measurement to try to obtain this phase diagram and see if we can precise the region of the critical point. So I will give some details about the ultrasound experiment. We want to use a pulse echo technique. So generally, you need piezoelectric transducers, a sample with parallel faces, because piezo transducers are phase detectors. And you need also a sample which lens is large enough so you can separate the acoustic echoes from the electric pulses. A thing that you don't have with organics, single crystal, they are too small because they are grown by electrocrystallization, and if you have parallel faces, you are lucky. So we have to do a lot of these crystals before finding the right one. And if you find one, you have small platelet thickness between 0.1 and 0.3 millimeter and a surface 1 millimeter square. So not possible to use usual pulse echo technique. So what we did is to introduce a delay line. So this is our delay line. The black platelet is the R crystals. We glue one transducer to the sample. The sample is glued also to the calcium fluoride crystal, and another piezoelectric transducer to receive the acoustic pulse. So this is a transmission experiment, one shot. We look at the signal going through the delay line. So we will look at the amplitude of the pulse to get the attenuation. I will not present these data. And we look also at the time to get the velocity. So the easiest mode to generate, because we have platelets, will be propagation along the normal to the plane. This is not the C-axis. For the orthorhombic structure, this is the B-axis. The polarization is longitudinal, because this is the fastest acoustic mode, so it is easier to detect. So the elastic constant for the orthorhombic structure will be C22. This is a compressibility module perpendicular to the planes. And we use an acoustic interferometer for the measurement in transmission. So we compare the phase of the signal going into the acoustic line to a reference signal, and we look at the phase difference. And this phase difference, we want to keep it constant during the experiment. Since the phase difference is related to the wave vector and the length of the sample, if you can keep the frequency fixed fix the phase during your experiment, it means that since you have for acoustic wave a linear relation between the angular frequency and wave vector, well, you can relate the relative change in velocity to the relative change of frequency and length. These length variations are 2 to 3 orders of magnitude smaller than the change in velocity. So we forget them. So we can relate the change in velocity to the change of the compressional elastic mode to the change in frequency. So this is what we measure. So we have the change in compressibility perpendicular to the plane. So now the results. The first experiment that we did were on ambient pressure superconductors. So the Bormin system, which is orthorhombic, and the copper SCN, which is monoclinic. So this is the Bormin and the copper SCN. So as you go down in temperature, this is a relative velocity variation, a function of temperature. When you go down in temperature, when you look at a compression elastic module, Generally, what you will get is an increase of the module because you are taking out the anharmonic effects. So it will increase monotonously and saturates at low temperature. And as you can see here, we don't have this monotonous behavior. There is a big stiffening appearing around 40 Kelvin for the bromine system, stiffening back, and a small anomaly around 11 Kelvin due to the superconducting state. And if you look at the numbers here, 6% variation where you find the peak. This is quite large because it means that you have 12% variation of the compressibility along this direction. For the copper CN compound, the anomaly is smaller, but the peak appears at 50 Kelvin. And again, you can see the small anomaly related to the superconductivity. Both anomalies appear at the same temperature. If I can go back to these microwave data. The peak in the dip in the elastic constant appear here and here at the same temperature. So it means that these features in the elastic constant seem to be related to the pseudo gap features.
Sorry, can you show again the
gap? Yeah.
So there are actually two features in this thing. There is more or less a T-square load, and there is upwards, and then there is a maximum.
Yeah.
So the temperature of the sound velocity anomaly, is it the maximum or is it the new?
The maximum here. If you derive this curve, you will obtain the same behavior as the elastic constant is showing you at the same temperature, exactly. So it means that we are at the inflection point there and there.
So it's not the maximum?
No, it's not the maximum. The maximum is related to this freezing of the CH2 groups at the end of the molecules.
What is the derivative?
Maximum derivative of the resistivity. So here, the inflection point. So it seems that there was a clear relation between these two features. We decided to do the measurement under pressure. So here it's for the bromine system. As you apply pressure, you see the amplitude of the anomaly decreasing and the position going to higher temperature. And you see also the TC going down as you apply pressure. So this is the expected behavior. So if you look now at the pressure temperature phase diagram of these two ambient pressure superconductors, TC is going down as a function of pressure, and TM, which is the temperature at which the minimum appears, is going up. As expected, again, as it was said by the previous speaker. So it seemed that pseudo-gap features on magnetic and transport properties are related to what we see on the elastic constant, compressibility perpendicular to the planes. And when we saw these measurements, well, we thought automatically at what you can find in one-dimensional system, like a one-dimensional antiferromagnet, cesium nickel chloride, or spin pi compound, the copper germanate. These are one-dimensional systems. If you look at longitudinal wave going along the chains, you will see a big dip appearing in the compression elastic constant. And this is due to magnetoelastic coupling. So as in this system, antiferromagnetic fluctuations are seen, we thought it was a coupling between these phonons and the antiferromagnetic fluctuation. So now, at the moment we did these measurements, we didn't have the system to do measurement on the chlorine system because you need a pressure cell using helium gas. Last year we got the system working, and I will present now the data on the chlorine system. First, I come back to this diagram. I will show you an example of a pressure sweep on the chlorine system at a pressure of 270 bars. So according to this phase diagram, 270 bars is around here. So I should cut this line, this line, almost at the same point, and going on the right side of the critical point. So this is the plot that I will show you now. This is the measurement, as you can see. We can observe directly the same thing that we saw on the ambient pressure superconductors. As you go down in temperature, you see a big dip appearing. And now look at the numbers. You don't have 6%, but more than 14% variation. So it means 28% variation of the compressibility perpendicular to the planes. And after stiffening back, you have two small anomalies. This is the inset, the zoom of these two anomalies. One at 13K, defined, the TC is defined as the maximum slope. And here a dip, a small dip around 16 Kelvin. So it seems to be it seems to be consistent with the previous phase diagram that I have shown to you. And this can be related again to the pseudo gap feature that have been observed on the other compounds. So what I will show you now is a different curve obtained at different pressure. These two anomalies, the big one and the superconducting one, are observed over a large pressure scale. So I will use temperature sweeps as a function of pressure. This one is only seen over a small pressure range. So I will use pressure sweep at fixed temperature. First, the large anomaly as a function of pressure. So this is 460 bar, small anomaly, centered around 50 Kelvin. You're going down in pressure, the anomaly is shifting down, and the amplitude is increasing. And look at the numbers here, 20%. So 40% change in the compressibility. This is quite large. And here in the inset, I show you that this anomaly has a maximum around 210. So this is 230, 26, 215, 200. And if you go down in pressure, 150 bar, the anomaly is still there. But it seems to be centered now around 32 Kelvin. So what I will take to obtain the phase diagram, I will take the temperature at which I have the minimum. What is the blue point? This is the point where you find the largest amplitude of the anomaly. This is 210 bars and 34 Kelvin. And as you go away from this point, the anomaly is decreasing in amplitude and it is shifting to higher temperature. On this side, the anomaly is also decreasing in amplitude and it's almost flat around 32 Kelvin. This point is the crossover point that I have taken from the microwave resistivity measurement that I have shown you before. So it seems to go right on this point. So this is the largest anomaly. Now a pressure sweep for the anomaly that was shown around 16 Kelvin. These are pressure sweeps. So the scale is different for the two panels. These are the low temperature sweeps, high temperature sweeps. You see the difference between the numbers. And again, the general features when you scan the pressure, it's to obtain a dip in the velocity. And you can follow two features here. When you are in the superconducting state at 9 Kelvin, you have a flat minimum. And if you put a magnetic field on this, you can see that superconductivity is appearing around 200, and it is centered around 275. So this anomaly and this one will be followed as a function of temperature. You go up in temperature, you can follow both. And if you go over 13.5, now this one has moved a lot, and the other one is still there. And this was surprising, because we thought that this one was related to the inhomogeneous superconducting phase. So we were expecting it to disappear, but it's still there. And as you go up in temperature, this minimum is going, the amplitude of the maximum is increasing again. You have 15% in year variation. And the other anomaly also is this place. So what I will present in the phase diagram is the position of these two anomalies. So the largest anomaly, and now you have two almost vertical line going from the lower temperature and going up, and these two features disappear, and they have the same position when you approach this point.
I have a question on these two lines. In that region, you have hysteresis.
Yeah.
So where these obtained? With increasing pressure sweep?
Sorry? Only with increasing pressure sweep, because for the moment we cannot do decreasing pressure sweep.
So I should not interpret these lines as indicative of the domain over which hysteresis is observed?
I will present after that some temperature sweep along this region. And this, in this region, you have large hysteresis as a function of temperature. So there is a connection between hysteresis and the existence of this transition zone, I may say. Okay, now the last anomaly, which is the superconducting one. I have divided the pressure range in three regions. First, 1 over 400 bars. This is an example of temperature sweep. So the black dots are for increasing temperature, and the other one for decreasing pressure. As you can see, you don't have any hysteresis on this anomaly. And the arrow indicates the maximum slope, which is the definition of TC. So, SC2, weak hysteresis is only observed around the critical temperature. And the amplitude of the anomaly increasing and decreasing the temperature is the same. And the other region, below 275 and between, not lower than 200 bars, you have large hysteresis appearing. That's what I was saying a few moments ago. Here I present data up to 16 Kelvin, but the hysteresis is seen at much higher temperature. So that's why I have divided the superconducting region in three. So now I can show you the full phase diagram. As you can see by comparison with the previous phase diagram, we obtained the same borders related to the superconductivity. We have a first order line here. On both sides of the first order line, we have inhomogeneous superconductivity. It means it is coexisting with something else. We cannot see what it is, but from the previous speaker, it seems that it is antiferromagnetism. And here there is no hysteresis at all. But we have identified now a critical point, where you have maximum compressibility perpendicular to the planes. If you go away from this point along the Mott the metal insulator transition, the amplitude of the MLE is decreasing. Along the two crossover line, you have the same phenomenon. The amplitude is decreasing as you go away from this point. And this region, as I said before, seems to indicate that you have inhomogeneous coexistence of another phase, but I cannot say what it is. But it was surprising to see that it has its origin in the superconducting and antiferromagnetic side of the transition. And a little surprise also, as you can see, we don't have any antiferromagnetism, the antiferromagnetic state. These measurements were obtained on three crystals. We tried very hard to see if there was an antiferromagnetic phase, but we failed to obtain that. And this I don't understand at all. We should have seen something.
You mean you don't see an anomaly in sound velocity?
No.
The materials have an antiferromagnetic phase.
I cannot tell. I was expecting something at the antiferromagnetic border. But there is nothing. So I will put the conclusion.
What's the difference between SC2 and SC3?
It's only, I have separated that according to the hysteresis. SC3, you have no hysteresis. So you have homogeneous superconducting state. In the two other regions, you have coexistence of two phases.
And SC1 and SC2 have coexistence?
Yes. So I will conclude by saying that we have observed a large softening of the interesting velocity, which seems to be in agreement with the predicted compressibility divergence of electronic degrees of freedom, as was proposed by Cotillard, George, and co-workers. We have examined two crossover lines joining at the critical point, and the high-pressure crossover line seems to be consistent with the pseudo-gap feature observed on the magnetic and transport properties of higher chemical pressure compounds. And I must also mention that using the MFT, Merino and McKenzie, and maybe you should ask the question to McKenzie concerning this data, they have looked at phonon anomalies due to strong electronic correlation. I don't know how to make the contact between this prediction and our data, because they were looking at molecular phonons, low frequency molecular phonons, and I don't know how to do the contact, because I'm not looking at molecular phonons. So, but maybe there is something there to follow, and maybe there is a question appearing with these data: is the MOD critical point playing a role in the origin of pseudo gap in ITC compound? Okay.